Pittance Podcast is brought to you this week and every week by the Brainstorm Brewery. Hello, welcome to the Pittance Podcast, episode 85. I am your host, Angelo, and I'm back this week with Ryan.
What up, what up?
And as with every set, at least every non-core set, we go over the mechanics and all the new rules that we might have to deal with, and we bring on Judge Frank to do this. Frank, how are you today?
Doing great, doing great. How's everyone today?
They can't answer you.
I know. I just wanted to do that bit again. It was really funny last time.
Okay. That isn't the first time.
I couldn't get my mic unmuted. One of the cats was making fucking weird howling noises and shit. Didn't want it to pick up on the air here, so.
Okay.
Glad to hear life treating you well, Frank.
Yeah, it's doing its best, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, I saw your pictures of Disney World and what have you, and I was jealous, I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, it was more work than vacation, but it still was fun. I'm glad someone was jealous.
Yeah, was you at Disneyland?
No, we did not go to Disney. We went to Florida, but we didn't go to Disney.
Oh, well. You was in Florida with your kids, that's pretty
Yes. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, that's better than a lot of people get to do, that's for sure.
I'm not complaining.
So, big SCG weekend this week. We had the Invitational, which means there was two Opens and a Modern IQ on top of the Invitational. So, holy hell, a lot of SCG crap to go over.
There was also a WMCQ this weekend in Indianapolis.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I paid no attention to it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was taken down, if anyone's interested, by Mono Blue. But props to Matt Hoey, a Chicago area player. Second place, I was rooting for him. And,
who was the winner?
Alex Siebold or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a good player, so that's good.
Mono Blue. He just threw the nut, literally the nut, both games, and his opponent on the black-white mid-range, just a bit too slow.
Okay, fair enough.
But so, congrats to both of them, so that's a big deal.
Yep, so moving to the good old Invitational in New Jersey, we had Alex Fincher versus Reed Duke. Reed Duke wins 3-1. Peter Ingram versus Chi Hoi Im. Peter Ingram wins 3-1. That was kind of a shocker to me. William Cruz over Devin O'Donnell, versus Devin O'Donnell. Devin O'Donnell wins 3-1. Tom Ross over Jared Betcher 3-0. Tom Ross over Devin O'Donnell 3-1. Reed Duke over Peter Ingram 3-1. And Tom Ross, running in fact, in his legacy portion, took this son of a bitch down.
Yeah, it takes out Reed Duke. Pretty stacked fucking top 8. A lot of good players.
It is an invitational. You should expect that.
Yeah, and I don't know if I've said it before, but I like how they do this best of five. I really like that.
Yeah, so do I. I kind of miss that from, you know, when the Pro Tour was
It really does eliminate a lot of the variants you might see happening in the best of three.
Right.
If you get mana screwed once in a best of five, it isn't, you know, necessarily the end of the world based on being on the player to draw on whatever matchup. So, yeah.
It's a little more easy to overcome it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's nice. So the Infect deck that Tom Ross was running during his, legacy portion, for those who don't know, they do legacy and standard. It's kind of a mixed pair for the whole weekend. It was 4 Blighted Agent, 4 Glistener Elf, 4 Noble Hierarch, a Viridian Corruptor, and a Dryad Arbor as his creatures, 4 Ink Moth Nexus, and a Pendle Haven are the lands that you need to know about. 2 Berserk, 4 Brainstorm, 1 Crop Rotation at 3 days, 3 Force of Will, 4 Invigorate, 2 Spell Pierce, 4 Vines, 2 Gitaxian Probe, 1 Green Sun Zenith, and a Ponder.
Yeah.
Really heavy on the blue there.
And I wish they would bring Kicker back as a mechanic. I really like that mechanic. Every time I see it on a card. I didn't get a play then. Was that decent and standard at the time, or was that?
It was okay the second time. It was better, I think, the first.
Okay.
Yeah.
You had all these mages that came into play. Like, there was the green one. I can remember if you paid a red, it came into play with a shock ability too.
Okay. Sweet.
Yeah. And I think the red one had a black ability that you, terror something.
Yeah.
This deck is fucking sweet. There's a couple of legacy decks I'm really looking at in this game of them.
Yeah, this one's fairly on the cheap side, I guess. 2 Necrofeed in the sideboard, 2 Rest in Peace, a Sylvan Library, 1 Force of Will, 1 Hydro Blast, 2 Crossing Grips, a Nature's Claim, a Piracy Charm, which was funny as hell.
I love that card.
Yeah, so do I. He killed early in the, it might have been during the play-in rounds, he killed a Delver with his one of Piracy Charm, and all I could do was chuckle.
Yep.
Like, that thing is no good for that past turn one, and it was, like, exactly when he needed it. 2 Swords and a Caracas. So, good deck, very straightforward. It's more of a combo deck than, you know, a straight infect deck, like leeches are not going to help you against this deck.
Mm.
You are going to typically die in like a turn. So
yeah, vines into berserk is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You invigorate. Here, gain 3 life. I'm going to kill you.
Yeah. Pretty nutty. This was a lot of fun to watch. Took down Jared Betcher in a quick fashion, just disposed of him like a, you know, like a boss. So I was happy about that because, you know.
Yeah, this is a lot quicker than Sneak and Show, if it goes right, you know what
right.
I mean?
I will say this, for as much shit as I talk about Jared Betcher, I do like that the guy wears the most on his sleeve. You can see, like, when he's tilted, like, the guy is definitely an emotional player. He really seems really friendly. He talks a lot to his opponents if we match and have the rounds and things like that. So as much shit as I give him, I would say I gotta appreciate that. I like that he is a, really seems like just a competitor that hates to lose. You see the guy lose on camera, his face, he just shows it.
Yeah, you
I
can
like,
tell he cares. I have nothing to respect for the dude for that reason.
Yeah,
like, he's a hell of a player.
As much shit as I talk about the Pokemon hat and stuff, he's a fucking hell of a competitor. And I like that he wears the most on his sleeve like that. And he's not afraid to ask opponents right after match. You see him do it a lot. Why do you do this? You know I was doing this or that. And he seems like one of those guys that if you play against, he'll help you get better. He's, you know, just for the questions he'll ask you after game or things you'll learn just from watching him. So.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, but it was kind of funny how he got just obviously tilted after game two of the match and just, Ross had game one, Jared Betcher went over the turn one kill or turn one. I don't know. He was going off on turn one. Tom had the force of will. He had it all 3 games. Scott played all 3 games with a force. He even had force of eight backup. The game, like, there just wasn't much there to do about it. Tom literally drew the nuts against him every day.
Yeah. You know what? Since we're talking about Betcher, let's jump to his list. It's your Sneak and Show list, and realistically, this one runs through the breach as a one of. That's really the only difference that you see from most Sneak and Shows, but it's been in plenty of them. The big thing is, in Legacy, sideboards are important. And he chose to go with 2 Gravedigger's Cage, 3 Blood Moon, 2 Echoing Truth, 2 Swan Song, 2 more Through the Breach, 3 Pyroclasm, and a Shattering Spree. So, I mean, with the Blood Moon, Gravedigger's Cage, the Shattering Spree, you can kind of tell what he was worried about.
Yeah, I think he tried to go off turn one with a Through the Breach and the Emrakul. Got shut down, and he seemed pretty upset about it.
Yeah, that'll happen.
He had, like, 3 Lotus Petals in that hand. It was nuts.
Wow. I mean, I'm assuming that he's running the Echoing Truth for Storm. It's an assumption that I'm making. I don't know if I'm right or not. Oh, well. Reed Duke, he was on Miracles.
Yeah.
Also known as Countertop.
Yeah, Miracles. It was a joy to watch him play this deck. He's really, really good at it. He's a really good player in general, but he's a speedy Miracles player.
Right.
So, yeah.
He's running, 4 Jace the Mind Sculptor, and that is pretty much his win condition short of Entreat as a 2-0, so, tough.
It'll get you there.
It will. His sideboard, Gravedigger's Cage, Dormarch Crypt, Baneslayer Angel, 2 Blood Moon, a Rest in Peace, 1 Blue Elemental Blast, 2 Pyroclasm, 1 Red Elemental Blast, a Spell Pierce, 2 Vidillion Click, and a Supreme Verdict and a Terminus. Now, okay.
How do we get the Elemental Blast back in Standard? It's not even Counterspell, just Elemental Blast, please.
Yeah, that ain't happening. They're, I don't know how expensive they are. They can't be that expensive. They're
no, the revised ones are still less than $1, I think.
I got a few, just from having just their common old cards. I don't know why that a card like that got different.
Because it's a 1 mana Counterspell. They don't do that.
But it's very matchup dependent. It's a sideboard card, obviously. It's not something to...
Yeah, but it's just something they do. Even, you know, they don't like to do even at instant speed. Like, they'd rather go with sorcery speed Deathmark.
Just a shame. We're ruining the game, Watsy.
Oh, boy. But this is, you know, you're seeing a lot of Rest in Peace, and I believe it was last week we saw a graveyard deck do well. No, we saw 3 of them in the top 8. I'm not losing my mind here, am I, Ryan?
No, I believe you're correct.
Yeah, so that kind of explains that part of it. And so, let's see, Reed Duke, he played against Alex Fincher in round 1. So what Legacy deck was Alex Fincher on?
Let's
dun,
see.
Dun, 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 Jund.
Punishing Fire.
Yeah, also known as Punishing Fire.
Yep.
Pretty sweet. He somehow lost a game. Just watch game 1. Reed is a fucking master. He lived through a Liliana ultimate, three Lilianas, in fact, that he had Bloodbraid Elf into through all three Bloodbraids and happened to land three Lilianas off of it.
Jesus Christ.
And, yeah, ultimated a Liliana at one point, leaving Reed with, like, a rest in peace and a bunch of lands, I think, and a Blood Moon and some non-basics, so. Still, I mean, he made his way. Reed is a master. Just that game one was fucking insane. So, and not mention, I think the guy started the game going Thoughtseize him.
Thoughtseize him.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, not so. Like Thoughtseizing you with him. Him.
Well, he had like the turn,
but not her.
Yeah, and then. Right, you know, into turn two, him to Turox. Pretty fucking good.
Right.
And I believe Reed mulled the sixth, so.
Okay, just, so.
If I did he play one-handed two by chance?
What's that?
Did he play one-handed two by chance?
if there's any more proof, you need that he's an asshole.
Okay, so Peter Ingram was on Bug Delver, and he beat Chihoy Im's Miracles, also known as Countertop. Do we need to go over either one of these decks? Yeah, I didn't think so. O'Donnell, he was on Bug, and he went up against Four Color Delver.
Is this the Bug? One of these guys, I don't know, maybe he wasn't in the top eight. Someone was running Helm of Obedience, I believe, against the Rest in Peace guys, and I thought that was a funny sideboard option. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think we need to go over these either. Four Color Delver is...
Is it really using four colors?
It usually does. Oh, the black and the green come off of the death rite.
Right, Shaman, okay.
Yeah, but it's really, that's the only reason they need black.
Yeah, sweet list, but nothing new there. Chihoy Im, good to see him in the top eight. He was on the American Miracles as well. So.
Countertop. Start calling it by the right name, man.
Countertop, whatever. He is running a Pyroblast main, though, and one Council's Judgment instead of two. So slight difference there. Only three Jace. He's also running three Snapcasters, which seems good.
Yep, so the said players' choices on Standard, and none of these should shock you if you've been following this show or the Star City Games Open Series. Tom Ross was on Rabble Red.
Yep.
Go figure. Reed Duke was on Green Red Devotion. Not a huge surprise there, but.
Well, yeah, that was a neat deck and kind of innovative. We've seen Green Devotion. We have not seen this Green Red with, I mean, it's basically a leaner, not as.
It's Green Devotion with Domri and Xenagos.
Tuned. Yeah, he's got the Hornet Queen in the sideboard instead of main.
Yeah, he also has access to Mortars and Chandra out of the sideboard as well. But
and three Xenagos and three Domri Raid was really, really good. Domri Raid kind of fell off. He came back in a big way this weekend.
Yeah, it is, though, the mono green. You puke your whole hand out on, like, turn four or five deck.
Yep, a couple Nissas, two Nissas. Yeah, nine Planeswalkers in total. Three Domri's, a Garrett, two Nissa, and three Xenagos. Pretty good. Not the seven mana Garrett. Not the one, we've been hoping for, but he doesn't have the black for it, so.
Right. Peter Ingram was on black, white, midrange. Devin O'Donnell, mono blue. Alex Fincher, mono blue. Naya Tokens from Will Cruz. Blue white control from Chihoy Im. And mono black devotion from Jared Betcher. I'm actually a little shocked it wasn't black red.
No, he has been on black blue for the last.
And black blue, yeah. He always splashes a color. I'm a little shocked that he didn't this time.
Yeah, he is looks like straight black. I don't see any negates or
nothing.
Huh. I wonder if that's because he figured people would be on the blue splash version.
I don't know. So moving to the standard portion of the Jersey area, Chris Van Meter gets to shave his beard, dude.
Yeah, took down an open, finally.
Yeah, Scott Metcalf, Michael Samut, Metcalf wins 2-0. Chris Van Meter's first victim was David Malfarina.
Malafarina.
Sure. Peter Rep versus Richard Wynn. Rep wins 2-0. Jarvis U 2-1 over Patrick Gardiano. Peter Rep wins 2-1 over you. Chris Van Meter 2-1 over Metcalf. And Chris Van Meter finally gets to shave. He wins 2-0. For those who don't know, he vowed to not shave until he won an open. And I think he did it there.
It was a bet.
Yeah.
I think it was a bet he had made with Brad Nelson of Austin, so he couldn't shave until he won a open. But he did it with his old friend in a deck he knows inside and out. Jun Monsters. Can I go over this real quick? Let's see. 4 Mystic, 4 Gore Clan, 2 Scavenging Ooze, 4 Storm Breath Dragon, 4 Caryatid, 4 Pelucranos. Something's missing. If you remember his Jund monsters in months past, he always had the Coursers. He's completely cut them out, and he's going 4 Goblin Rabble Masters. Mm-hmm. More aggression. And Rabble Masters, fuck that. Card is really good.
7 Walkers.
You're gonna see a lot of it. Yeah, 7 Walkers, 4 Domri, 3 Xenagos, couple Mutavolts of note, 1 Mana Confluence, 2 Dreadborn, 2 Mizzium Orders. Pretty straightforward on the spells. The sideboard, pretty much what you'd imagine. 3 Mist Cutters, 2 Golgari Charm, 1 Magma Spray, 1 Putrefy, 1 Ultimate Price, 1 Bow of Nylea, 1 Vraska, 2 Flames of the Firebrand. That's really good right now. That's a good card. I'm kind of surprised to see that. I didn't know that he was running that in the sideboard. That card is nuts right now. 1 Mist Cutters and 2 Rakdos Return. Yeah.
Yep.
Straight up beat you down, and I can't blame him. I like the switch from the Courser to Rabble Master.
Yeah, that's different. That I will actually consider as a real innovation, because those are two way completely different cards.
Blood Stemness, and he added a couple. I think he was running 4 Warclan Rampagers last time. So Goblin Rabble Master, after a couple turns, Warclan is just tons of damage. It's really good. So.
Yes, it is. Let's see. Peter Rep was on Mono Black, Green White Aggro from Metcalf, Black Green Devotion from Jarvis U, Green White Devotion from Malfarina, Red White Burn from Patrick Gariano, and
Gariano, you're gonna let me burn your face. I'm gonna make you an offer you cannot refuse.
Richard Wynn, Mono Black Aggro, and Jund Walkers from Samut.
Yeah, what is this Jund Walkers list like? Take a look.
Looks like Jund Walkers.
Yeah, but I mean, they haven't figured this deck out yet. It changes weekly, so it looks like Garrick has made his exit from the Jund Walkers of the open series scene. He showed up in a bunch of these lists and is kind of not there anymore, but Liliana Vest has made her way to a main board, so there's that. I like Liliana Vest, man. I don't think she was all that good maybe last time she was around, but I happen to think she's going to be pretty powerful going forward.
I think she's good against mid-range, late mid-range, not early mid-range, and control decks, but they're terrible. I mean, it is just absolutely horrid against aggro decks. Because it just, yeah. It's too slow. It's like, I need an answer. Oh, there's Liliana Vest. God damn it.
You still got a lot of loyalty though.
Yeah, but you die.
Yeah.
She's still loyal to you, but you're dead.
I like this Planeswalker package though. I like the Vraska coming back as a one of and over the Garrick. I mean, it's 5 mana and does the same thing the 7 mana Garrick does when the turn it comes down, blows something up. It's all Vraska. It
doesn't gain you a bunch of life.
Doesn't matter though. I mean, it's okay, life gain, whatever.
That incidental life gain on that card is a lot better than...
It's not Sphinx's Rev.
No, but I mean, it's pretty damn good. Like, I mean...
Yeah, but...
You hit a Desecration Demon with it, you feel
only
good.
Only if you blow up a creature. If you blow up a Planeswalker or something, you're not life. And Vraska does the same thing for 2 less mana, so...
Yeah, well, whatever. Legacy. Michael Dursko, 2-1 over Tyler Fujimura. Ross Miriam over James Rinkowitz.
Yeah, Ross Miriam. He's a boss.
2-0. Let's see. Jack Kitchen over David Long, 2-0. And Shaheen loses to Dan Musser, 2-1. Dan Musser over Kitchen, 2-1. Ross Miriam over, Dirkzo, 2-1. And then Dan Musser wins it all. Hey, I know him.
Good player.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's on good deck.
He's really good. I think my career record against him is like 1-3.
Yeah, props to friend of the show, Shaheen Sarani, 7th place, though, so.
Yep.
Congrats
to him. Props to Dan for taking this thing down.
Yeah, that's
I haven't talked to him in a while.
I'm a big fan of Ross Merriam, and I love the way he plays elves. It sucks that he got bad beats again in another finals. With elves.
You know, it's kind of funny, like I knocked this dude out of a PTQ once and I feel kind of bad now because he's so much better of a player than me. Poor Dan. Anyway, Dan was running Miracles, also known as Countertop. Miriam was on Elves. That's cool to see Elves in second, but it's not a good matchup for it. It's not.
I mean, it can kill Miracles pretty quick if Miracles is slow at all.
Yeah, but if Miracles has the counter package and it's when it tries to go off, like, there's just no chance. Yeah. Ooh, he's actually running a single counter spell.
Yeah.
I don't like the 7th edition art. I like Ice Age art. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Let's see. Elves deck. Anything new in there that we need to talk about? Nope. I think Elves is fairly figured out, right?
Yeah.
Dirkzo was on Death and Taxes.
Yay.
Again, pretty that's straightforward. Sarah Avenger, that's kind of interesting.
That's always been in this list.
Has it been?
Yep, there's a three or four of. Yep, we always see that. A four Flicker Wisp, a one of Aven Mind Sensor.
Yep, Imperial Painter came in fourth with the Mr. Kitchen. It's Imperial Painter. Like, I mean, it's Painter Servant with Imperial Recruiter. There you go. He is running a single Jaya Ballard. That's not normal, is it?
I don't believe so. What is Jaya Ballard do?
Oh, she's the Red Elemental Blast, the Incinerate, and the Inferno on the stick.
He's also got a Koth in the sideboard, which is fucking awesome.
Koth of the Hammer.
Yeah, just gonna throw that out there. I like that a lot.
No, that's actually very interesting. Yeah. Oh well, so that was that. I'm sorry if we're running through this very quickly, but a lot of crap was spoiled and we gotta go over it all. Green Red Depths, this is your Lands Dark Depths deck, but it runs 25 spells, so you can't quite call it Lands.
This guy run into Reed Duke, Blood Moon, in the top eight. Is this Reed Blaine? No, sorry.
Duke was in the Invitational top eight.
Not Reed Duke, Dan Musser.
Let me check. See, Dan Musser. What's that guy's name? Kitchen?
Yeah. Long, David Long.
No, he did not.
Okay.
See, so that's Depths. Red Delver. It's Blue Red Delver. Why am I? Price of Progress. Okay. Maybe I will go into this. Try and figure out why that's it.
That is a sweet card.
Why is Price of Progress in here? I mean, it's a pretty good burn spell. Fork Bolt.
That seems good against a lot of decks.
Yeah.
And Fork Bolt is good. So.
Okay, you know what?
I just like
kind of like those little innovations.
Yeah, I just don't like Grim Lavamancer all that much, but
I don't know. I think if you're going to do the Price of Progress and the Fork Bolt in here, I kind of like the Grim Lavamancer in there as well. Just because of that, you're taking more of like, you know, a burn package, but I can still see the other route where you want to go with the Eidolon or whatever.
Okay.
So, I mean, both of them are fine, I guess. Esper Stoneblade, Shaheen Serrani, shocker.
Yeah, some sweet one-ofs, though, man. I like this one of Intuition, one of Counsel's Judgment, you know, Supreme Verdict because it's, Shaheen. One of Counterspell, one of Engineered Explosives. I like what he's doing here.
He has Disenchant in his sideboard.
Yeah.
Disenchant. Just disenchant. That's all.
Yeah. Notion Thief is really good. That and I want to say the card is called Redirect. Were huge blowouts on the weekend. Just blowout cards. People go to, get their ancestral recall on or ancestral vision on.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I draw those cards.
And they redirect. Yeah. That happened two or three times on camera this weekend. So I don't know if redirect is some kind of new tech or something, but.
No, not really.
I don't know. We'll see if that kind of replaces. I mean, it seems to do the same thing you want Notion Thief to do, and it costs a lot less. So.
Yeah. And we have Blue, White, Red Delver to round out our top eight.
Patriot Delver. We got Patriot Delver, yeah.
Okay.
Nothing exciting. That's what I told you before the show. That's what I'm calling it now.
See,
it's a shout out to guys over at Spiky.
Americans, let me point this out to you. Most countries in the world, their flags are red, white, and blue. You'd be shocked at how many are out there. Just do a look up on that on Google. Like Britain's red, white, blue. It's red, white, blue.
It's Patriot control, damn it.
just want to point that out. Just, you know. And Modern, we have, Riker versus Ellis. Ellis wins 2-0. Chodan, Chodan 2-0 over Mila. Yarborough 2-1 over Older. Moraine 2-0 over Long Name. Moraine 2-1 over Yarborough. Ellis over Chodan 2-1.
That's Sosa Marrero Eduardo. The Long Name.
Eduardo Soso Marrero.
Yeah.
Okay, and Norian wins it all 2-0. We normally don't get that, do we?
No, I was going to say, where'd you get this top eight from?
Yeah.
I see the top eight list, but not the breakdown of...
Yeah, they usually don't give that to us. That's new. Maybe it's because it was an invitation when they have all those extra hands on. So we had Rug Scapeshift wins it all.
Yep.
Blue White Red Control in second, Green Red Tron in third. Rug Twin in fourth, Green Black Midrange fifth, Rug Scapeshift in sixth, Pod in eighth, Malira and Blue White Red Control in seventh, and yeah. Ooh, Living End in 15th. I like it.
Green Black Mid, it's, this is the rock deck. Why do they call it Green Black Midrange? It's Green Black Rock. Fuck's sake.
There's Living End in 15th. I like. I love Living End decks. They're just so unfair.
That only, let's see, no, there's a few pod decks in the top 16. An Affinity in 10th, so. That's surprising. Affinity's been on a tear.
Well, it's something that can be hated out actually fairly easy, so.
Sure, yeah.
It's not too crazy. Frank, we brought you on for a reason.
Yes.
Mechanics.
Yeah.
So let's start right at the top. Outlast. What the hell is Outlast, Frank?
Okay.
Wait. What mechanic is Outlast belong to? Like, what is that? Abzan?
That is Abzan. Yes.
Okay.
Or that is screw junk. It's junk. Yeah. It's the junk mechanic.
Okay.
Outlast is it's again it's pretty straightforward. It's an ability where it's on the card, it shows the, shows a mana cost, and the mana, basically is you pay the mana cost, you tap the creature, and you put a plus one counter on the creature as a sorcery. And that's all Outlast really is. It's just an activated ability that puts a counter on it.
That really sucks.
Okay, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Are you allowed to just pay the mana and not tap the creature? Because the way it's templated, it looks like you can?
No, because the one I'm, let me see if I can find a better picture. The one I have.
It's like one and a one white, and then in parentheses after that it says one white tap. But it doesn't have the tap on the first part, so I'm kind of confused by that.
Let me take a look at a picture of one, because I actually don't have it, I just have the words up.
No, you gotta tap it, dude. It's a huge downside to it, and it's what a lot of people are complaining about.
No, I get that. To get the plus one counter, you absolutely have to tap it.
Mm-hmm.
I get that, but can you just activate it and choose not to tap is the question I have.
No, it doesn't look like it. Let me pull one up. And I apologize, my computer is on its deathbed.
Trust me, we all understand computer problems here.
if it's part of the activation cost. The tapping is to the left of the comma.
Okay.
Or comma, sorry, the colon, wow.
Okay, so can I ask another simple question then?
Sure.
Why did they template it this way then?
I think because they needed to. They needed a word to put on there. I totally agree with you. I think it should be an ability word, not a keyword. It should be like Threshold and Blood Rush.
Okay.
But yeah, they, that's my best guess.
Okay, fair enough. Prowess. What is this? This is the blue, red, white.
So we get some examples. So Outlast, real quick.
Oh, sure.
Things like it's each creature you control with a 1/1 counter on it has first strike. So Outlast at least affects like your whole team.
No, that has nothing to do with the Outlast.
Yeah, that's a secondary ability of the card. I think, and with the very limited amount of Outlast cards we have, I think all the Outlast creatures have another ability that does something.
Yeah, that has something to do with creatures with counters on it. So, but I mean, it's synergistic. Obviously, Outlast, the ability puts counters on dudes. If you have counters on dudes, you get these second abilities from these Outlast creatures.
But as a whole, that actually has nothing to do with the Outlast ability.
Yeah, I don't like it, though. Just not a fan of this.
It seems like it has no upside. I mean, just you're spending a turn tapping your creature when you should be doing something else.
Right.
Just
can't block with it, nothing. Just tap my creature and let you smack me in the face.
Exactly.
Okay, so we can move to Prowess then, I suppose.
Okay.
And this is your Jeskai.
Jeskai, yes.
Red, white.
And Prowess is a triggered ability that triggers whenever you cast a non-creature spell, and any creature with Prowess gets plus one until the end of turn.
Okay, so you say it's triggered ability, therefore it's stifleable?
Yes.
And let's see, when does it go off? When you play a
non-creature spell. When you cast a non-creature spell, right. So,
okay, so that doesn't have to come into play. You just have to play it, and if it gets countered, you still get +1/+1?
Exactly. So if you're playing blue-red burn and you burn a creature, your prowess creatures will get bigger when you attack.
Okay, that seems actually pretty straightforward.
It's pretty straightforward, and it's actually, I like it better than Outlast. I mean, it kind of fits like the niche that that is something I think red, white, and blue would do.
And at least this seems to let you play more on pace and tempo, whereas Outlast, it's like you want to be attacking with these dudes, but you can't if you want to put the counter on them.
Yeah, I think with Outlast, what you're going to do is you're going to play them, you're going to just use them like you would normal creatures until you can no longer attack with them, and then you'll start pumping them. But once they become useless, but the whole only as a sorcery thing is the biggest problem with that card.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Oh, okay, now, returning mechanic, and a fun one at that. I've played with Doomstalker, so I know how good Delve is.
And I've played with Logic Knot, yeah.
Explain to me what Delve does, Frank.
All right, Delve is, the best way you can describe it is a static ability that changes the casting, it changes how much you pay to cast a spell. And whenever you remove, you cast a spell with Delve, if you remove a card from your graveyard, you reduce the casting cost by one generic mana. So,
And this is Salt Die mechanic, right?
Yeah, right.
Sweet.
And an example is one of the cards I spoiled. There's a 4/5 flyer for 7 and 2 black, but it has Delve. So if you remove 7 cards from your graveyard, you exile 7 cards from your graveyard. You can cast it for just 2 black.
Oh, is that the dumb card that has no synergy with the second part? That,
yes.
Yeah, the neg XX for...
If you play that for 2 on, like, turn 3, you're not going to care about that second part of the card.
Yeah.
It's just funny. I was like, who designed this? This card makes no fucking sense, but yeah.
Well, it's very similar to Tombstalker, and I think Tombstalker was just a bit too good, so they had to give you downside to make it get as big as a Tombstalker.
Okay.
Which is a shame. I'd like to see Tombstalker come out in this set. Let's see. So, we have, any questions on the, Delve mechanic there, Ryan?
I'm going to preempt something. I will say that if you use Delve, you actually don't change the casting cost of the card. So even though you're paying 2, the converted mana cost is still 9 if something cares about it.
Yeah, you can't pay for any colored mana and spells cost of Delve.
Right.
Okay, just a stupid question that I know will pop up. And I already know the answer, but, you know, let's throw it out there for our newer players.
Sure.
Say I go to remove a bunch of things from the graveyard with my Delve.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm removing things, you decide to pop a him. You're, not him, but...
Tormod's Crypt.
Tormod's Crypt. What happens?
That's when you get a judge involved for timing issues. You actually can't respond while a spell is being cast. If a person announces a spell, you have to wait till he pays all the costs and everything until you can do something. And at that point in time, the cards have been removed and the casting cost has been reduced.
Aha.
So if your opponent says, okay, I'm going to Delve to cast Shambling Dependence, and you say, hang on, Tormod's Crypt.
It does nothing.
Yeah, you have to wait till he puts the spell in the sack. If he announces the spell, you have to wait.
So you have to let him exile the cards and all that.
Right.
Okay. So, and it also says if the spell with Delve is countered, you don't get those back from exile. They're gone for good.
Exactly.
Okay.
They are a part of the cost, so as you're paying it, you might lose them.
Yep. Well, you will lose them no matter what.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You're going to lose them, but you might lose them for nothing.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, your 8 mana cost that you was going to pay 7 Delve with, guess what? Next time it cost 8. So there is a huge drawback as far as that goes. These are typically used, you know, at least the way I played them before, they were more, you used them for the finishers. You didn't use them for, you know, your common cards that was way overcosted. He was just like, okay, I'm going to use it to just finish somebody off because, you know, I'm going to play this, again, Tombstalker. I hate going back to it, but it's that good.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to pay, you know, I'm just going to get rid of these cards from the graveyard. What was it? You pay for 2 blue or 1 blue? Or 2 black or 1 black?
I think it was 2 black.
2 black, yeah. It's like, I got a 7/7 flyer. Fuck yourself. On turn 3. Nah. Okay, so Raid. This is our Mardu mechanic.
Yep. And this is an ability word. This is what I think Outlast should have been.
Okay.
It's basically a bunch of creatures that have similar abilities, but they didn't want to actually keyword it. So a creature with Raid will be known if it has an ability where if you attack with a creature this turn, the Raid will trigger, it's really hard to explain. It's usually a triggered ability, let's try it this way, it's a triggered ability that checks to see if you attack to the creature this turn. That's the best way to say it, actually. So, an example would be, and it's apparently on creatures and spells, there's a spell that lets you cast copy your next instant or sorcery, and it has Raid, so it checks to see if you attacked with the creature this turn. If you did, you get to copy that spell again.
Okay, when you're casting this, it checks all past state-based actions from the game, and then...
Yeah, it just checks to see if you attacked with a creature this turn. So, obviously, if you cast this during your first main phase, it's not going to do anything. If you cast it during your second main phase, chances are it might do something.
So it doesn't stack, though. If you attack with, like, 4 creatures, you're not using this. You don't get a Raid 4 times.
No, you get it once.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is not stifleable.
Yeah, it is. Hold on. No. Some of them aren't. Let's put it that way.
Right. How of the Horde. Wanted to, you know, double
check. How of the Horde.
Stifle is activated ability.
Activated or triggered.
Yeah.
And this is a triggered ability. It's when it enters the battlefield.
The two I'm looking at can be stifled. I don't know if they're going to make them. There's probably going to be someone has a replacement effect where it's, you know, they have the word instead, and that one I'm not sure if you can stifle it. I have to look how it's templated.
Because it's weird. It says, like, a Mardu Warshrieker, for example. When Mardu Warshrieker enters the battle.
You can stifle that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But in general, as a whole, just the raid mechanic is not what's getting stifled. You're stifling what's behind it.
Yes, you're right. Exactly. You're stifling whatever comes after the hyphen on the word raid.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm trying to ask hard questions.
No, that's okay.
That seems like a really sweet mechanic. I'm most excited so far about that one. That seems really sweet. And it seems like exactly what Mardu wants to do.
Yeah, I actually like this one. I mean, this is coming from Control Player. I think it's really cool. I think it's pretty flavorful, and yeah, it should be straightforward and easy.
Yeah,
I
plan on sitting down and drafting a lot of this. This is actually, which is going to shock people, I'm not going to probably pick the junk pack during the one pre-release I get to do. But yeah.
No junk. This next mechanic, though, makes me laugh, the name of it, for Teemer.
Ferocious.
Ferocious, yeah.
Ferocious Teemer.
That is yep. Your blue, red, green clan.
Yeah. This reminds me a lot of, I think it's Naya from Shards, where it looks to see if you have creature with power over something. Back in Shards it was power 5, now it's power 4.
Yeah.
And, the one that I'm looking at, Hair of the Wilds, and it's a, triggered ability that, again, whenever it attacks, it checks to see if you have a creature with greater than 4, and if you do, something happens. And again,
this
I don't
case,
know.
It's +1/+1 on Hair of the Wilds.
Right. And I don't, again, without seeing more of the set, I don't know if they're going to make something different or, you know, make replacement abilities, but right now it's just standard triggered ability.
Mm-hmm. Now, on to the mechanic that is going to cause headaches for people who's never played with it before. Morph.
I am so glad this is coming back.
So am I.
I kind of like the insert that they have where they have the token that you can put on your morph to say it's a morph. I kind of like that and I kind of don't at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's useful, I suppose, but I don't think it's necessary.
I agree. And the one thing I do like about it, though, is that actually this is for the first time in the game where the morph isn't the Onslaught expansion symbol. Right. Even in Time Spiral, they look like little spiders, and now they look like balls of energy. So I think that's actually kind of cool flavor-wise.
Yeah.
But to the mechanic, I can actually probably talk hours about this. So I'm going to try to make it as brief as I possibly can.
Oh, I plan on asking a lot of questions about this, regardless of the fact I already know the answers.
Sweet. Just,
there's so many questions that are going to come up during tournaments.
There is. Basically, with creature with morph, you can play it as normal. You can pay its normal casting cost and put it in the play face up. Or you can pay 3 generic mana and place it face down. And when it's face down, it's a nameless, colorless creature that's a 2/2 with no abilities, other than the fact that you can pay its morph cost and turn it back up.
Okay, and morph costs can vary from anything from what? Like discarding a card to...
In the past, they've had pay life, they've had discard cards, they've had mana of all sorts, and from colorless to color to... Yeah, it's basically whatever they feel like is a cost, they'll put it on there.
Okay, and when you say flip it back over or flip it face up, that's literally what you mean.
Yeah, think of like the double face cards from Innistrad. You're actually taking the card and manipulating it to flip it over. So the back isn't showing anymore, so the back's on the table, and the actual creature is face up.
Yeah, you're looking at a color when you're playing
yes,
against it.
Exactly.
It says Magic the Gathering with a little ink mark.
Yep, or whatever sleeve your opponent has.
Ooh, sleeve. Okay.
Hopefully your opponent will have the Stephen Raphael morph sleeves.
I don't think those fired.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah. He only gave it a week. So that was a mistake that they're going to fix in the future. Now, yeah. I'm sitting in a tournament, Frank.
Yes.
And Ryan asked me this a couple weeks ago, but, you know, just to confirm what I told him, I'm sitting in the tournament, and I'm playing against Ryan. Me and Ryan,
okay,
you know, we're going back and forth, and I beat him. And
yes,
I have 2 morph creatures on the table. I pick up my cards, and I throw them in my deck, and I walk away. What happens to me?
Congratulations, you're a bad player.
What? I won.
No, unfortunately, part of the morph is whenever the game's over, you have to reveal your morph cards. There's a high, there's a good way to abuse a system and put non-morph cards face down. So whenever a morph creature leaves the zone, the battlefield zone, you have to reveal it. And
you have to also, from what I understand, maintain the order in which you cast your morph cards, because if things get mixed up and you, you know, you go to flip the wrong one or something. Isn't there some kind of ramifications for that?
There is for that. That is for your opponent's benefit. You can't shuffle the cards around. You have to play them, like, wherever you put them down, they have to stay in the same order.
Yeah.
You can't move them around. They have to stay there. I don't want to say once the morph creature's there, that's where it stays. Obviously, there is a little bit of give, but you can't shift the order of them from left to right. They have to stay in the same order.
Okay. Am I allowed to check myself before I pay the morph cost? Oh, what did I put here?
Yes, you can look at your face down cards at any time.
Okay.
Only yours, not your opponent's.
Unless
there's that artifact that you have in play, yes.
Lens of Clarity. You may look at the top card of your library and at face down creatures you don't control.
Yep.
That's kind of mean. Mm-hmm. That's really mean.
But I will say this also. I haven't seen an update to the penalty guidelines, but if you put a face card down, a card face down, and it's not a morph, that is actually punishable by game loss.
Oh, so if I go ahead and it's a game loss as well if I walk away without showing him, correct?
Correct.
It's match loss.
It could be. It's like it's been a while. Morph's been way so long I haven't had to worry about it. But yeah, it could be game or match loss.
Yeah.
I say match loss because they probably want to not have that behavior so I can see them
bumping
up the penalty.
So if I do decide to put a lightning strike down and then, you know, try to quickly get away, I'm going to get in a bunch of trouble.
Yes, you are.
That's going to be cheating, correct?
That is cheating, yes.
That is in fact cheating.
That is definitely cheating. Doing it intentionally is cheating on so many levels.
So the big thing that we can tell our listeners is if you are playing against somebody, the game is not over until they flip those cards over.
Exactly.
Regardless of life totals.
Exactly. Yeah, they have to show the cards. Even if in the game and you kill a morph creature, you have to make sure that they flip it over so you can see it.
Oh, okay. So you definitely have to do that then as well, too.
Yes.
Which should be common sense to most people because all cards entering the graveyard enter the graveyard face up.
Mm-hmm.
There's no face down unless... I don't even think there's a card that allows that. No, exile. No. You can exile them face down.
Sometimes you can, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it depends on the card. But yeah. So, anything that I'm missing here that maybe I should bring up?
I'm sure there is. Again, morph has a bunch of stuff. The other thing that I've mentioned before is that turning it face up is a special ability that doesn't use the stack.
That's true. That's true. So you could do that whatever. If I decide to shock something that's a 2/2 and you go, I'm paying it.
Yes. And that is predominantly prevent the opposite from happening for me to try to flip it and you shocking it in response. So
well, that's why it doesn't use the stack. Like once
exactly. That's what it prevents. Like,
yeah.
So you can't respond to your opponent flipping over their morph.
Nope. Correct.
Okay.
But you can respond to whatever triggers from it flipping over.
Okay.
Interesting.
And also, as I said before, with that in mind, be mind in modern, that gets around split second.
That gets around split second. Okay, that's kind of new to me. I wasn't aware of that.
Well, back when it was in Time Spiral, we used to run wheel benders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because they would try to split second something, and you can actually still redirect it because it doesn't use the stack. So that gets around the...
Oh, shit, that is right. I forgot about that.
So I don't know if split seconds run a lot in modern, but if it is in your area, you have a weapon now.
Okay. And these things, once you flip them over, they do all kinds of crazy things. I haven't seen anything insane yet.
The one I saw was adding a green, a red, and a blue to your pool.
Yeah.
That's about it. That's about the crazy I've ever
seen. There's another Ice Feather Aven that when you flip them over, you can return another target creature to its owner's hand, so it's kind of a bounce spell.
Yeah.
They all usually have some sort of effect attached to them, unless they're just huge creatures.
Right.
So, I mean, just... Know the decks, people. People are playing in them.
Yeah.
And I guess it... Oops, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, if anyone's really, like, not satisfied with our discussion here on Morph or looking for something deeper, more complex as far as maybe its implications in Legacy and Modern, the recent JudgeCast episode, Face Down for What, is a good source to go on Morph. They spend well over an hour just talking about
Morph. Morph is insane. It does a lot of weird things that is outside of the normal game. And it's for newer players, it's going to be a little bit of culture shock, but you'll grab it really quickly. Once you see it done two or three times, you're going to be like, oh, okay, I get it completely. Not that hard.
Right.
But just all the different, like, little, like Frank said, not using the stack and things like that, that's a little awkward at first.
And it's the interactions of other cards. I don't want to get into copying these things because that's just insane. But that's another thing that comes up a lot.
Yeah. What happens if you copy the face down creature?
You have a 2/2. It's a 2/2 colorless nameless creature that
and
can't flip up.
It doesn't have a morph ability whatsoever.
Correct.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah, you get a 2-2, and that's it.
Yep.
Let me think. I know there was something else I wanted to bring up about Morph. And
if I can get nostalgic for a moment, I do remember in Time Spiral Block, you were able to suspend a land if you played your cards right. And that was interesting, because they had the counterspell that, I think it was called Delay, rather than countering it, suspended it. And there was a Morph land. So you're able to play the land as a Morph. If someone delayed it, you had a land that was suspended.
So strange.
Yeah, and I apologize. I don't remember what happened. I think you ended up that you could play it if you had a land play available, but that was such a corner case. I don't remember it.
No, you couldn't.
That's right.
Because of the, when suspend actually comes into play, it's during your upkeep and you cannot play advance.
Yeah, it was something weird. Like, I don't remember the end of the interaction. I do think that was it, but yeah, it was just one of those things that made you groan when hoping no one would actually do that.
Yeah,
you
know, it kind of was the groan test.
That one was.
Yeah, I know there's more. I had something in my head and then I lost it and it's
sorry about that.
For now. But you're probably very happy as a judge to see that modal spells and abilities have now been reformatted.
Yes, that's I like the new templating. It makes it a lot clearer.
Yeah, it's the bullet points are so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Cryptic Command with this.
I was just thinking that. I hope they reprint Cryptic Command now.
I hope they reprint all five of them because, like...
Yeah, I miss Profane Command, actually.
Yeah, I love Profane Command. I'm going to bring this creature back and make you lose X life. That was usually what you used it for, but...
It was either that or I'm going to give my guys fear and you lose X life.
Yeah,
and then you lose more life.
Lose X life. Oh, that I did like Profane Command. The green command was very good.
Mm-hmm.
The austere command, which was the white one, was okay. I mean, it was a very, it was kind of worked as a wrath at times.
Right.
In a set that had no wrath.
Yeah. It's, the white command is actually kind of, I think, like a cult classic. It gets more play now in like EDH.
Yeah.
Just as another, but I think that's one reason why people still remember is that they play Commander.
And the other one was Incendiary Command?
Yes.
Okay, so I got them all.
Yeah. And Incendiary Command was the weirdest one because I thought a lot of the modes actually didn't go well together. Like blowing up land and Winds of Wrathing someone.
Yeah, it really was not, but it's kind of hard with red because like, you can't put two burns on there, I suppose.
Exactly.
So that's the way they did it. But the card that we get to look at here with the new formatting is Soultie Charm.
Mm-hmm.
And it's choose one, dash, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point. Target, destroy target monocolored creature, bullet point. Destroy target artifact or enchantment, bullet point. Draw two cards, then discard a card. So it's very straightforward now. I think it reads pretty well. I was used to the old ones, but I can see this being so much cleaner.
I wish charms were like this. Selesnya Charm and stuff, it's just clean.
Yeah, it's a lot cleaner. It really is. You don't have to read all that text. It's very
good to point. I think the charm that made them want to do this was probably the Urzhov charm, because that one ability about returning a creature was just way too wordy.
Yeah.
And I think that's what did it.
Fair enough. So, Ryan, do you have any overall questions about any of these mechanics that we did not cover?
No, I'm excited to see how they play out. That's about it.
I have none. Frank, do you have any comments about any of these that we did not ask about?
No, none I can think of. I tried to think of a bunch of corner cases, but I think we were pretty good with that.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear that I did something right. Yay, I'm a good person. So, guys, I don't know if Yun's watched the PAX party and then saw all the spoiled things since then. And we'll wait on the big news. We'll just slow roll that and we'll go into, let's each pick like, I don't know, a couple cards off of the spoiled list. And we have a bunch of them here. And we'll go over them real quick, which ones we like. And then we'll get into the big stuff. So, Frank, you're the guest. Pick a card, sir. Any card. Pick a card.
Okay.
Any card.
All right. Well, I've always had a liking to the red, white, and blue deck type, so the fact that they made another legendary creature, I have to start with Narset, the Enlightened Master. I really like this card.
Okay. What does Narset do?
It costs 3, a blue, a red, and a white, has first strike and hexproof, and whenever you attack with it, you exile the top 4 cards of your library, and until the end of your turn, you may cast any non-creature spells that you exiled without paying their mana costs.
Seems like a pretty good commander to me.
Yeah, it does. And I do want to try to make a standard deck with it. I know it's probably not going to work, but it's a good commander card, and I do want to try to break this thing in standard.
Okay. You know what? I like it. This is a legendary creature, human monk, and it is mythic.
Yes.
So this kind of goes in the same grouping as the Zergo Helm Smasher that we talked about a while ago. Like, these are the clan's mythic creature.
Yep.
Ryan, I know you got something you want to
say. Well, I was going to say, with everything we've been seeing, and I gotta give Watch some props for, I like when they take the game in a lot of different directions, and it seems like there's a lot of cards that are using, like, you know, from ETBs to, your library to graveyard to exile zone. I mean, they're just making use, it seems, out of, you know, all the different zones.
Yeah, in general, my consensus with this, or my thoughts about this set, is it might be a bit too overpowered.
That's what I'm starting to wonder.
it seems like every card they release, I'm going, what?
A card I really like, we'll stick to the junk. I love junk. Anna Finza the Foremost. She is the Abzan Khan, I guess.
Very mythic, yes. Legendary, gotcha.
Is. She says, when Anna Finza the Foremost attacks, put a 1-1 counter on another tapped creature you control. Okay, so that works with the Outlast ability or whatever.
Yeah.
And if a creature card would be put into an opponent's graveyard anywhere, exile it instead.
So, that's strong. It got, you know, a rest in peace built right onto a 4/4 for 3. It's not quite a hockey mom as far as power and toughness goes, but I think that second ability is pretty damn good.
Creature cards. Now I got a judge question right off that.
Sure.
We see that the clans want to see them interact with each other, and we have this card, Rakshasa Vizier.
Sure, okay.
She's 2 in bug.
Mm-hmm.
Says, whenever one or more cards are put into exile from your graveyard, put that many 1/1 counters on Rakasha.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does that work with Anna Finza? If a creature card would be put into an opponent's graveyard, exile it instead.
It's not a combo.
Yeah. It never actually makes it to the graveyard, so you're not exiling it from the graveyard.
Right. So in Anna Finza, the word that matters is the last word in the card, instead. It replaces going to the graveyard with being exiled, so.
Okay, I just, for some reason, I thought even when things were exiled after leaving the battlefield or whatnot, that they touched the graveyard for an instant and then.
Some of them do. The one, like, Emrakul will hit the graveyard because that's a triggered ability without, a replacement effect. It says when it hits the graveyard, shuffle. This one has the, I don't think Emrakul's instead, and I have to double check that one, but, this one has the word instead, so it actually replaces going to the graveyard with being exiled.
So it's like it's basically recipes. Rakshasa, while we're on the subject of that card, or Rakasha, I love the, Cambodian themed art. It looks like Angkor Wat temple in the background, and it's sort of like Cambodian dragon mask, and it's a Catman, which
is different.
That is kind of cool.
The fact doesn't have wings is odd, but it's a cat demon nonetheless.
Okay, so I get to pick one now, and I'm picking a Planeswalker. His name is Soren, and he's 2, a black and a white, 4 loyalty, Solemn Visitor. +1, until your next turn, creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain lifelink. This is a Soren ability we've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
For -2, put a 2/2 black vampire creature token with flying onto the battlefield. Those vampires are stronger and have flying. I don't think the last ones had flying.
No, it was just
no, they didn't.
Yeah, and then his -6, which is his ultimate, you get an emblem with at the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player sacrifices a creature. That's rude.
Yeah, except it doesn't do the game, and it's not an emblem that matters in every matchup. It's pretty, I think this Storm's pretty bad. I'm just gonna come right out and say it.
It protects itself, gauge of life. I don't think it's bad for 4. I don't think it's bad for 4. Like, that's, you know, it's not stupid overpowered, which at 4 you don't want it to be. It makes creatures, which is just fine at 4, and it can gain you a fair amount of life. And, I mean, yeah, the ultimate doesn't win you games, but if you could stall a board out and you get that ultimate out, you're going to win.
Yeah, I just don't, I don't know. A Planeswalker I could see going forward being real strong, though, is Ashiok. I think Ashiok's going to be sick.
Okay. Frank.
Yes.
You get to pick another card. Pick a card.
Excellent. I'm actually liking some of the ascendancies, and actually I do like the Mardu ascendancy. It's at a chamber for red, white, and black. And whenever a non-token creature you control attacks, you put a 1/1 red goblin creature token into play to the battlefield, tapped and attacking.
Wow, that seems really good with,
that's
what Rabblemaster.
Every non-token creature you have, right? So if
yes.
You attack with 3 dudes, you're getting 3 goblins.
Yes.
That's
it. Yes, and you can sacrifice the ascendancy to give creatures you control +0/+3 into end of turn.
I like this with Rabble Master.
Mm-hmm, I do too.
Well, I mean, the tokens don't give you tokens.
Yeah, but the whole sacrifice it to give your Rabble Master once you build him up, give him that plus three on the back end so he can survive an attack, I like that.
Usually your Rabble Master, you're not worried about, you're going to win that turn probably anyways, the turn you're swinging with the Rabble Master. I don't like the...
No, this gives you the option to swing early. That's why I like it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the second part of it, but I do like that first ability is really good, I think.
Really. Yep.
I'm surprised it's not something like creatures you control have haste, but I guess we already have that in a 3-mana red spell now. Yeah,
Temur Ascendancy does the haste, so.
That's weird to me.
Yeah. Let's see here. Ryan, pick a card.
Okay, I guess Abzan Ascendancy. Stick to the ascendancies here.
Okay. Cycle.
So this one is junk colored, and it enters the battlefield, put a 1/1 counter on each creature you control. Whenever a non-token creature you control dies, put a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying onto the battlefield. See, this doesn't cause me to sack it, and not only that, like, whereas Mardu, you sack it in your defensive posture, like, I think if you could sack it and it gave your creatures plus 3 plus 0, that'd be way better. I think the fact that Abzan Ascendancy, that you don't have to sack it, and you get continual value out of it, it's pretty fucking good. I like this one a lot. This one is a card the posse was kind of jumping all over, so I'll throw that out there.
Yeah, I don't know really how I feel completely about the ascendancies. Like, I know I don't want to play them turn 3 usually. I'm thinking I'd rather play something with a little more, like, onboard presence turn 3. But
I mean, this could pump a lot of little 1 and 2 drop weenies.
Yeah, they could. I mean, that one's probably the best of them because, when it comes into play, it just does that. But turn 3, you might have, what, 2 creatures out? 3 max? I mean...
Yeah. I could also see something maybe with I don't know if this is going too far, but Abzan Ascendancy and Spirit Bonds, but that might be too much. The card from M15 that puts out a bunch of 1/1 dudes.
The next card I'm going to pick, though, is going to be the one with the absolute best name in the set so far, and that's Ankle Shanker. For 2, a red, white, and a black, you get a 3/3 Goblin Berserker creature, haste. Whenever Ankle Shanker, man, it's so hard to say, attacks, creatures you control gain first strike and death touch until end of turn.
What a bad piece of art on this card, though. The fact that they made goblins redheads now. Did you notice that? Is that why you picked this, Angelo?
Well, you gingers are goblins, like goblins. Ginger?
I thought it was a Kifkin.
So it kind of does
look like that. It does kind of look like
But no, it's just, I mean...
That's a sweet card, man.
That's powerful. I'm just not going to quit attacking because why would I? First strike and death touch? Okay.
Death touch. Pretty good. Yeah, we'll see what Mardu does if this mana cost is a bit high for what it wants to do in terms of like just coming out and smashing, but.
I think it's like a finisher. Like you can turn 5.
Pretty sweet.
Yep.
Death touch, is it me or does death touch just not seem like a Mardu ability?
Mardu's black, dude.
Yeah,
it makes sense. I mean, haste for red, first strike for white, and death touch for black.
I see. They're going for the full flavor circle. Kind of like death touch for black.
Yeah, it's more greed black because greed has it as well, but yeah. No, I can absolutely see it on this heart, and it's pretty sick. Frank, pick one more, last one before we get into the big stuff.
All right, last one.
Ryan's gonna pick too, but the last one.
Last one I'm going to pick is going to be, I lost it, I'm sorry, is gonna be a card that I like to name also is Utter End. I was saying some not bad things, but I was just saying I don't like the trend that, Wizards were going with, but I still like exiling a non-land permanent for 4 as an instant.
Yeah. See, when I first looked at this, I compared it to, Unmake.
Yep.
That was just creature, but it only cost 3.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an easy 3 to cast because it was, split mana.
Right.
So I don't know if 4 is too slow.
I was considering this closer to Vindicate.
Okay.
And while Vindicate could hit lands and this one can't, it's an instant, not a sorcery, so I kind of can see that.
It's straight up removal. I mean, for
4. Exactly.
It's about as good as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And it exiles it, so I suppose if his downfall is going to be at 3.
Yeah.
And if you're going to exile it, probably does cost 1 more.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah. Ryan, you got something?
I was going to say the Rattleclaw Mystic, but I believe we've exhausted that on the page. Let's go Crackling Doom. That's a pretty sweet card. It's instant Mardu. Mardu colors. Crackling Doom deals 2 damage to each opponent. Okay. Each opponent sacrifices a creature with the greatest power among creatures he or she rolls.
Yeah, when I first saw this, my only response was damn.
Yeah.
It seems good.
Yeah, this is going to really be an EDH staple.
More than likely.
I mean, I'm thinking pretty immediate. If you're in these colors, you're going to have that.
Yeah.
That's pretty sick. I'm glad you picked that one, because that only leaves me to pick between one of 2 cards. And one would be the obvious one, and that would be Sarkon, so I'm not picking that. I'm picking the most unfair card I've seen in quite a while, and that's Sagu Mauler. Why the hell would you make a 6-6 for 6 hexproof? Why? And give it trample? Come on now.
Well, to be fair, they're probably dead by then.
I don't know, green-blue, I mean, this could be just a finisher in a control deck.
The trample, to me, pushes it over the top, because if it didn't have trample, at least your opponent could sit and...
Just chump block it all day.
Chump block this thing, and that's fine. Then, you don't really care about the hexproof or whatever.
Right.
The trample is just like a middle finger.
Like. But the thing is, like, you can play him turn 4 for 3 generic, and then flip him for 5. So it's like, oh, I got a 6-6 on 5 that has trample and hexproof. You can't beat me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I look at this card and just go, that's not fair. Now, if I get it in a draft, yes, I'll be playing it. But, like, this looks like a blue-green control finisher to me.
This looks like the reason they printed Crackling Doom.
Forward. I think Bug is going to be pretty strong, actually. Yeah,
that actually is a good reason why they printed Crackling Doom. Way to go, Frank.
Thank you.
I mean, if you're not in those colors, you're screwed.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Is Sarkon, you did mention Sarkon, is he really even that good?
I don't think he's bad. 4/4, he becomes a 4/4 indestructible dragon with haste.
And he can't lose loyalty, yeah?
Yeah, and that's for +1. And then for -3, it deals 4 damage to target creature. That seems fairly decent. And then, see, his emblem at -6 is at the beginning of your draw step, draw 2 additional cards. And then at the beginning of your end step, discard your hand. No, I'm fine with that. Draw 3 cards every turn and play them all.
Yep.
Burn their face away. Draugr!
Yeah, he seems pretty sweet.
Yeah, he's good.
Him and Nissa together seem like they're going to be a force.
Yeah, because we made such a big stink about no wrath and hostilities was revealed, and we should probably talk about this nonetheless. It's 3 white and 2, or 3 colorless and 2 white. Destroy all creatures and all permanents attached to the creatures. So we get to blow up equipment there. We get to blow up enchantments. We get to blow up random other things that might be attached, but I can't think of at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, Lissa's the best I can come up with.
Yeah. Loyalty tokens, poison tokens, wither tokens, they're all gone. That's, I don't know, 5, be so much better at 4. Okay, but guys, the big news. The big news, the thing that just like absolutely swamped everyone and they went, oh my god! Onslaught fetches are back.
You called it.
Yep.
I did. I'm quite proud of myself for this one, just because, you know, I got a tip from somebody saying that they overheard something, and hey, it turned out to be true.
I think they kind of gave that tip to everyone in the podcast community. Got knew about this months ago. It's been talked about all over. There was a leak with the guide show that supposedly said to sell these.
Yeah.
I don't know why though. I mean, as soon as they came out with this news, the original's price went up.
It's because of the original arc.
Yep.
That didn't make sense to me. I thought that the exact opposite would happen. And no, the price went up.
No, it wouldn't make sense to most people, but there's a lot of people out there that really care about the art. It's just like the foil thing. I never understand the foil thing.
The Zendikar fetches dropped and went up.
Well, the Zendikar fetches would drop because people who want to get into modern now have a hopefully cheaper outlet. So I can see people not wanting to buy the Zendikar fetches now.
Okay, because these are pre-ordering at 25 of these.
Yeah, which I need to talk about that. These things are pre-ordering at 25 a pop. Now, will this hold this price? And this is a question you need to ask yourself, because if you crack a box, and I'm not being unreasonable here, you're going to get 3 or 4 of these, more likely 4 in a box.
Right.
Average rare slots are 30 in a box. You usually get between 5 and 6 mythics, so I'm just going to say 30. 30 rares. These are 5 rares. So I can very easily, just on fetches, getting your money back from your box.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever mythics and other random rares you get, which, I mean, we've already talked that this is an overpowered set, I can't see these holding value for that reason alone. Like, a closed box, an open box being worth more than a closed box seems backwards to me, and I have only seen it once since I played Magic, and that was during Morning High.
Mm-hmm.
The demand on these is insane, though. It's 10 times.
It is, but I'm telling you, the demand's going to drop like a rock after a month of these being drafted. People are going to have theirs, man. I mean, if you go buy a case, you're going to get a playset.
Right.
Of every one of them. And if not every one of them, you'll have six of one and two of another, and you can just trade the overpays that you have for the other ones. Like, I cannot see these holding that value. I see these dropping. Now, there might be one that gets, like, overplayed in standard and holds around, like, 15 to 18, but one of these is going to be, like, maybe sub 10. It happened during Zendikar, so, I mean.
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope you're right. I don't think they're gonna see the light of under $20 in a very long time.
I will tell you this, Ryan.
But I hope so.
Cause I know you love to pre-order stuff. If you're gonna do a bunch of pre-ordering this time, just buy a case of cards.
Yeah, I was just gonna bite the bullet and pre-order a playset of all these.
Just buy a case of cards. Cause you'll more than likely get it, and then you'll get a bunch of other cards that you won't have to buy later.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
I mean, rather than dropping $500 right now on, you know, 20 cards, just go buy a case. And more than likely, you're going to be very, very close to having a playset, and you're going to have a bunch of other cards that you probably want to buy, like Sarkhan and Sorin and all those other cards that we talk about. Like, I mean, it only makes sense to me if you're going to be a pre-orderer to just pre-order a case, spend that first night at home cracking packs instead of going to F&M.
Yeah. What I want to know is, are we going to see if there's room for them?
There's room for them, but I can't see it.
There's also someone showed a chart that the Zendikar fetches fit as well.
Well, that's what you was talking about, right? The Zendikar fetches? Like, I can't see it.
Ally colored up pain lands. No, we just got the enemy pain.
Yeah, I can't see that just because we just got the enemies and this is a wedge set. Like, it would seem really weird in a wedge set to put the allied pain lands and the allied fetch lands. Like,
well, wouldn't that cover all the bases?
What? I can't see two rare sets, two rare cycles though.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I wouldn't be shocked if you had like a crazy mythic for each clan.
Yeah.
Like that wouldn't shock me. Like you see some absolutely insane mythic for each.
That's a really good guess, man. I like that idea. Like each clan having like a land.
A tri-land instead.
Like their guild house or something.
Yeah. Except not as shitty as the guild gates.
Yeah.
I do wonder if they'll just say fuck it and throw the Zendikar fetches in here as well.
Would that make me happy? Yes. Do I see it? No.
They fit.
They fit. They absolutely fit. And even if you add panoramas, they fit. But I can't see it, man. Like, that would make this set, they would have to print so much of this set, it would be unreal because people will be buying packs left and right. Because especially, like, if you figure there's 10 fetches in there, holy shit, you're going to get so many in a box, it'll be unreal. Like, you're guaranteed your money back at that point.
Yeah.
And then some. So, like, I don't know, man. That's...
I would love it if they did that. It's not going to happen. I don't know. But it'd be cool if it did. I think that you're probably right with they're going to come up with some wedge allied land that'll come into play tapped unless you control, like, the bug colors or something.
Yeah, maybe. You never know. It could be something absolutely insane and silly since we are getting fetches to make these fetches better playable in standard where we get a tri-land that's, like, plains, island,
Mountain.
On the card, and you just go, what? You
got these uncommons that come in tap.
Yeah, but if those aren't planes, you can't fetch those up.
Okay.
You know, and like, if they're gonna reprint a dual land, like a real one, even if you say it's a tri-land, that's their way of getting around the restricted list, then it's going to be mythic. Like, they're not going to print them at rare.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a complete shot in the dark. I highly doubt it, but that's what I'm going to put out there until I'm proven wrong. Shouldn't be, like, by the end of the week that'll happen. So, by the time you're listening to this, you probably are like, Angelo, you're an idiot. You're wrong. And you are right. So, yeah, I mean, have we exhausted the fetches talk? I mean, you have anything more to say there, Ryan?
No, I mean, we'll just have to wait and see what the prices do, and fingers crossed you're completely right. I hope they sink to $10 pretty quick.
I will say this. If you're going to play Modern or Legacy, okay, flat out plain and simple, Modern or Legacy, because I'm not 100% sure these are going to see a bunch of standard play. But if you plan on playing Modern or Legacy any time in your life, you need to buy a lot of cards right now. Like, you need to buy in now. But, like, maybe not, you know, pre-ordering, but wait a month and get your copies of these.
Yeah, Modern's been asking for these for the last couple years now. So.
Yeah, because fetches are not going to lose value once these things rotate out of the format. And they're only going to go up until they get reprinted again. So, go for it. Get your copies now. Don't goof around. Hell, I'm buying paper cards because of this. Just because, who knows, worst case scenario, in 4 years, I can sell them in, like, double my money.
I can't wait to see you in standard and paper.
Why?
I'm pretty excited about that. Just, I don't know, because I play standard, and then if you're playing standard, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
And you got a deck daddy if you need it.
Well, right now, the way the changes makes standard actually a lot more enticing to me to get in, because it's going to cycle so much quicker. And I mean, looking at these sets, it doesn't look, at least with this set, and you know, even if you go back and look at Theros, there's nothing overpowered. And it seems like it's a lot of archetypes where the better player typically is going to win. And I enjoy that type of feel where I don't just lose to just random card that cascades into fucking craziness. You know, so yeah, I don't know. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to no more Sphinx's Revelation and just. Yeah, I'm so over RTR. Like, I'm not even playing anything but Modern until this comes around.
I'm over Pack Rat. I'm over talking about all of these decks.
Ooh. I just noticed that cat we talked about, that whenever you exile a card from the graveyard, put that many 1/1 counters, ooh, that works really good with Delve. Oh, that's pretty fucking good with Delve.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's really good with Delve.
Yeah.
Shocker, that's their mechanic. So, we have the cons, and their fate has been reforged. That is the name of the second set. See how I did that? See what I did there? See that?
Nice segue, nice segue.
Yeah. that was terrible. So that is the second set's name. Its release date is January 23rd, which is a little early. Typically, the release is like February 1st, and the pre-release is like, so they pushed it back like a week. And pre-release events will be the 17th and 18th of 2015. There's 185 cards in this set. Yeah, what Ryan's stomach said.
That was dog.
Oh, okay. the Pro Tour will be in Washington, D.C., and that'll be February 6th through 8th. The Pro Tour format will be Modern and Karn's Block Draft. And the top 8 will be Modern. I kind of, now that Standard's cycling so much, I kind of wish all of them were just Standard. That's my opinion. But they show this really neat picture of Sarkhan Vol in front of a dragon, and I don't believe that's Bolas. The horns are wrong?
Yeah, I don't think it's Bolas either.
Has Ugin returned?
Has who returned?
Ugin.
I never knew what that thing looked like, so.
What card are you talking about?
There's a picture at the bottom of this page, right?
Okay.
Okay, it has Sarkhan Vol, like, damn near on fire, and there's a big dragon behind him. And, I mean, Ugin has only been told in lore, like, nobody knows what he looks like or anything, so it's possible that it could be him, or it's possible that it could just be a random dragon.
Was Ugin a ghost? Oh, no, that's Bolas that he's standing behind.
Dude, those horns are wrong.
I don't think it's Bolas. I think Bolas has something floating in between his horns.
Oh, he does. Bolas does. Yeah, and his horns are more rounded.
Yeah,
is
more Ugin, like a scimitar.
Is Ugin a spirit?
No, Ugin is an old Planeswalker dragon.
But I know, but is he? Did he turn to a ghost or something? Because in the trailer, Sarkhan says that he is, like, haunted by two dragons, one of whom was, like, a tormentor, and then it shows him with, like, Nicol Bolas. And then he says another, like a spirit or something.
Ugin was trapped by Bolas. He's not a spirit per se, but he's no longer alive per se. He controlled the Ghost Fire, which was a colorless burn ability that, Chandra actually tapped into at one point. He's supposed to be like one of the lost, elder dragons that we never was told about. Like, he rolled, I'm guessing that he rolled over Tarkir. That's a pure guess. But, like, he rolled over a realm, and him, Sorin, and somebody else are actually the ones who locked up the Eldrazi, and a lot of that power came from Ugin. Now, that's according to the stories.
Was it Nissa?
No, Nissa has not been alive nearly as long as these two.
Okay.
Nissa had no clue what Eldrazi was when Sorin went pick her up. So you have to look at very, very old planeswalkers as far as help goes. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. It is what it is. We'll see in fucking January. So until then, it's all pure speculation. So who really cares? Game day, by the way, is on the 14th and 15th. Online pre-release is the normal week, January 30th through the 2nd. And the release date will be the 2nd online, with release events firing from the 2nd through the 18th. It's MTGFRF for the hashtag, for those that care. I play on Twitter a lot. I barely ever use the hashtags. I'm doing it wrong. I know. So yeah, cool, interesting, neat. Lots of con stuff that we're going to continue to go over the next couple weeks. We have Fate Reforged to look forward to in the future. And Ryan, what the hell have you been up to?
Making some tweaks to my deck, modern that is. I kind of learned the hard way that I want Burrington Forge Tender over Core Firewalker in my sideboard.
Rather than just listen to me.
Yeah.
Because I told you that.
You did.
So I'll
be making that switch there. Trying to tweak it, keep up with the meta at the shop. Might be going to SCG. There's an SCG in Collinsville, St. Louis. It's actually in Collinsville, Illinois. And yeah, that's about it. So.
Seems cool. Frank, what the hell have you been up to since the last time we spoke?
Not too much. Like we said earlier, I just got back from vacation. I've been, magic-wise, I've been trying to get perfect my standard deck right now. I'm forcing Chords of Calling in the deck, and I'm trying to get that thing to work. And
are you working with?
You know me, it's high color, but it's mostly green-red. It's mostly a green-red devotion deck with, like, Spirit of Labyrinth main deck and a couple black creatures on the board.
With Cord. Ugh. That's demanding, man.
What is this? Is this a standard deck?
Standard deck, yeah.
Why so intent on running Spirit in the main board?
Because at the shop we play, a lot of people like Sphinx's Rev. So, and the end of my turn, when they Sphinx's Rev for a bunch, I Cord out the Spirit for two.
Huh.
It's just so demanding, though, all that green mana that you have to. But then again, it's you.
Well, it's mostly a green deck, and honestly, the lands all produce green, blue, or red. And I mean, like I said, it's a work in progress. If I get something a little more concrete, I definitely will post a list for you guys. But I mean, it's like a green red devotion deck with a couple random.
Yeah, well, why the hell not? Right now, we have like perfect mana, so
exactly.
We're gonna do it now.
Taking advantage of it.
Seems pretty sweet, yeah.
Yeah, seems cool.
But that's about it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let's see, what have I been up to? Well, Memorial Day just passed, which was kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
Labor Day, not Memorial Day. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
They're just both Mondays that we get days off for.
Yeah.
Memorial Day should be Armistice Day anyway, but I'm not going to get into that. just saying. I decided to take the whole 3-day weekend off, which I normally don't do. Like, I normally would work, because typically, if I work a holiday, I get paid $30+ an hour.
Jesus.
Nice. Well, I get my normal holiday pay, and then I get time and a half for, so yeah, I make like, over $30 an hour, but I needed some time to myself. So I took that time off and I sat at home and I played video games all day. Like, I don't get to play video games ever. Like, if I do play games, it's like, I gotta play Magic because, we got this show.
The podcast, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, when I do play games, it's typically what I play, and it's almost because I have to play. Not because I don't like the game. I love the game, but, once in a while you do want to switch it up with something different. And I got on Grand Theft Auto and just killed people for a whole day, and it was fucking glorious.
That's funny. I was actually doing that with Fallout the other day.
See, it's just glorious when you can
Skyrim, but GTA is acceptable, I suppose.
Well, I got rid of my Skyrim copy because I had already logged like 500 hours of my life into that game and decided, I probably need to get rid of this because this is becoming an addiction. And I'm kind of glad I did, although I still, pick up South Park once in a while, which is kind of like a Skyrim knockoff, just in South Park.
Yeah.
Still a good game, but, it's kind of a, like, they even call your character the Dovahkiin, so, spoiler alert. Aside from that, like, I basically have been just chilling. Like, I watched a good bit of the SCG Invitational because, there really wasn't much else to do. I finally got my yard under control.
Okay.
The thing is, I do all this work, I do all this landscaping at my normal job. And then I come home and I have like 7 lawns that I cut during the week. And then, plus I still pick up side jobs on top of that. So like, you know, my average work week is 80 plus hours between, you know, the two jobs. And that's not even including the podcast. So I never have time to do my stuff. So like, you know, I have this real little front yard and I have this really, really tiny, like behind the garage yard, but then I have my backyard, which is actually fair sized, but it's completely fenced in. So I haven't touched my backyard in over a month. I had grass over my knees back there. And I actually, it took me 4 hours to cut my lawn and it normally takes me a half an hour, but I got it all under control. So now the plan is to not let it get out of control and make sure I cut that some bitch every week. But yeah, there's that. Let's see. What else have I really been doing? Not much of anything, to be honest. Like I've been trying to just relax. I do too much running. And at this point, I just wanted to relax. I got to work by myself a lot last week, which was nice. I lost a ton of water weight, which I think I talked about during the last cast. It's so fucking humid here right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of been my week. Moving to shout outs then. Frank, thank you for coming on. Big shout out to you, sir.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Shout out to Engine Dave. Frank and
his chair. Shout out to Frank and his rocking chair there.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. The rocking chair. Shout out to Buttercup because I haven't given him one in a while.
Yay, Buttercup.
Yeah. You know what? You know what I forgot to bring up? I started putting out invitations and that's all I wanted to say. There actually is a couple more things I need to talk about during what's up before I get the shout out. So I'm sorry. Frank, you still get yours.
Oh, sweet.
But like, I started sending out invitations this weekend. I got about half of it scheduled. There's still more invitations that are going to go out, but then from Ince Prison. Like I have confirmed 7 people. So that's half the season.
Wait.
So that's, I mean, that's going to happen again. I don't know if we'll do a third yet. I really don't. And then also the hoodies. By the time you hear this, there should be a link up. If not, it'll be a day or two after that. We're getting zip up hoodies that seemed overwhelmingly what people want, but I actually have to work very closely with Teespring support to make this happen because it's not a normal, it's not a normal product that they offer. So because of this, I don't know what ramifications I'm going to fall under. I don't know if I'm going to have to sell like 50 of them. If that's the case, we probably ain't going to fire the thing, but it looks like that's the way it's going to be. And the way the design looks at this point is it has the logo real big towards the middle of the back. So the hood doesn't like cover it up. And then on your breast, left side of your breast, it says Pit Imps and like in a very similar font. So that's the way those are going to look. But again, I'm still working with Teespring support to get everything hashed out, but this is going to happen. Should go up really soon. It'll be up for at least 2 weeks. Grab them when they go up, please, please, please. By the time you get these, it'll be October and you'll wish you had a hoodie. I'm just saying.
Sweet.
October's right around the corner. So again, Dave, I'm going to give a shout out because it's been a while since I've done that. I don't know why. He just kind of slipped my mind for a while there. Let me give a shout out to Justin. He showed back up. He was another one that just kind of disappeared from the page. And
I say the nay.
I say the nay, damn it. Like, well, I actually got a hold of him on Twitter and asked him if he was okay about a week ago.
Yeah, we had him on the show before.
Yes. So I'm glad Justin is back around. You got any shout outs there, Rye?
I'll second you there with Justin. That's cool. Shit, man.
Shout out to shit.
Yeah, I didn't really plan it. Shout out to Sierra Nevada for making some really good beer. Shout out to my dog for being patient with me, albeit slightly annoying the last 20 minutes or so trying to go outside. So,
you'll have that.
Shout out Shachi and, yeah.
And shout out his annoying cats.
I will shout out Megan for she's getting better and better. So playing that pod deck starting to get real scary.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Need to get her to a real modern event then.
Yeah.
Get her in an IQ or something when you're down in St. Louis.
My deck is a lot of 2 power dudes, obviously, 8 bear style. And you go with Pontiff and Thalia, and then with that trigger on the stack, sacrifice the Pontiff, haunt Thalia. Thalia dies, all my 2/2s die.
Yeah, if you do go to St. Louis this weekend, for real, like, you should have her join the IQ.
For the modern portion?
Yeah, and just, you know, be supportive as hell at her. If she's getting that good with it, that she's scaring you, like, that's the type of deck that she could spike it win.
Yeah.
If she's playing that well with it. Frank, you got any shout outs, buddy?
Well, obviously shout out to you guys in the posse. Thank you guys for having me on.
Aw.
Yeah, we love you, Frank.
Thanks. Shout out to my family for letting me do this. Again, it was getting kind of hectic there in the beginning at the end. That's why the chair went off as people started coming around me. So I apologize for that, but yeah.
Okay. I'll shout try out to those guys. It out. Okay, so that's all the shout outs. Contact info. If you wanted to get a hold of me, you can get
Wait, not to cut you off, Sorry. Forgot to shout out. Shout out, Houston and Kelso coming up on 100.
Yes. That'll yes.
Be out any day, so.
Yeah, that thing's like 2 weeks in the making.
It may come out tonight.
The thing better be epic because it's been due for a while. I know they've been recording shit for it for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, no excuses, so.
Yeah, so, but contact info, if you want to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me at Gonksu on Twitter, that's GANKSUOU. Same thing on the MTGO. Also, if you wanted to join the clan, send me a direct message on MTGO, you know, and I will give you an invite. Yeah, that's what I got. Oh yeah, pitmpodcast@gmail.com. Ryan. How would we get a hold of you, sir?
Facebook page, of course. Hit me up. And yeah, Twitter at Brother Yam, Brother Ryan, get at me. I'm climbing towards 1,000. I want to cross that mark here soon, so help me out, people.
Frank, how would people get a hold of you if they so chose to?
Obviously, again, Facebook, and best way is email, frank.tavern.3@gmail.com.
Yes, and I'm assuming it's feel free to send you judge questions.
Oh, yes, please, by all means.
Yes, he'll answer them for you.
The more complicated, the better. If they involve chains of Mephistopheles, the better.
I love chains. No, I'd be real honest, like on the Facebook page, when somebody says rules questions, I immediately tag Frank. I just need Frank. Because you know what? While we sit there and debate what it might do, he'll come in and go, here's what it does. And that's nice to have. But next week we have the SCG St. Louis to go over. We also have GP Salt Lake, which is going to be the last M15 limited event at a GP, and it is the last GP until October. So, you know, it's going to get a little slower again, and we're going to be leaning on SCG pretty good. But until next week.
Hey, get out there. I'm fucking this up. This is going to take some weeks to get used to, Corey Brown. Cards to tap and ass to slap. Something like that. I don't fucking know. You gotta figure this out, man. I need to practice this thing.
Have a good one, folks, and go fuck yourself.